If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the award-winning voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Award-winning? Are we up for podcast of the year?
I would love that to be the case. Yeah, I would love that to be the case. Unfortunately not. No, we'll have to wait till next year for that one. But award winning because I just noticed a few things at the end of this season. We should stress that you haven't won any awards. That's not the... Although, did you win any awards as a player?
Oh, well, it's funny you mention that, Matthew, because I did win many awards as a player. In fact, the one that I won year in, year out, which was... I don't know how to view this award. On one hand, it's a positive. On another hand, it was a bit like they would always bring me up on stage for it, which was community ambassador. I had so many.
Yes.
Oh, so many community ambassador awards.
Quite a common one for goalkeepers, isn't it? Oh, we'll give him the PFA Community Champion Award.
Yes. Especially when I was like a number two goalkeeper a lot of the time. It was a bit like, oh, you know, you played your part. Come on, up you come. Come on, let's give you an award. And it did feel a little bit like that. I mean, I did do my bit, of course. Lots of player appearances and, you know, like to keep my charity work to myself, Matthew. But no, I did do bits and pieces for that. But no, the one that meant the most, in fact, there was two that meant the most. One was player's player. That is, yeah, that's the one that everybody wants to win, I think, as a player, to be recognised by your fellow colleagues. That's, I would argue, the biggest one. And the other one I won was Hottie of the Year.
Hottie. Is that what you just said? Hottie of the Year.
That's what the award was called. I mean, if you want me to elaborate, I can. I mean, I think it's quite self-explanatory. I can see there is zero surprise on your face that I won that. But yes, that was an award they gave at Brentford every single year. And I remember, for anyone that remembers that particular time, Sam Saunders was also in the squad. And I think he thought he had it nailed on. So when they named me, you should have seen the look on his face when I walked up to get that. And that was a big moment.
Very sexist, really, isn't it? I hope you got up on that podium and said, this is nothing but male objectification right now.
Exactly the words that came out of my mouth. How did you know?
Okay, so you won player's player where? At Brentford?
Brentford. Do you know what? It was the season I had. The season I wrote my book about, which can give that a plug. I think it still sells a copy or two every 3 months. So thank you for whoever's still buying it 12 years on. But it was that season where we did make the final of the JPT. We had a good season that season. So it was that particular season. Got a bad injury at the end of it. So I also think that also played a part because I'd had a decent enough season. But you know what it's like? You get injured with a handful of games to go. There's also that little bit of pity in there as well. So I think that just really, really secured it, you know?
Okay, well, the reason that I brought this up was because it just seemed like there were a few winners of Player of the Year awards and Players Player of the Year awards this season that went to goalkeepers. So as you said, many community champions, but in terms of those who won both, so there were a few who won both Supporters Player and Players Player, Carl Rushworth, Victor Johansson, Sam Tickle, Viljami Sinisalo, Ben Hinchliffe and Paul Farman. Players Player at Barnsley went to Liam Roberts, and then Player of the Year as voted by the supporters, Lucas Jensen, James Belshaw, which is incredible. He won away Supporters Player of the season, but only arrived, January, February time, Luke McGee, Nick Townsend and Max Crocombe. And then there were also a few young Player of the Year awards, Jed Ward, Jackson Smith and Harvey Cartwright at Grimsby. So I would say that's not a bad number. You're looking at around, let's have a quick count. So it would be around 21 awards there won by goalkeepers of the... So what have we got? This isn't Premier League, of course. So you've got 72 teams. So what, 144 awards that would have been available?
Yeah, so are we doing a percentage here? Are we going to...
You're the math king.
Yeah, well, no, yeah. The point would be here, and I actually do find that a lot, is that, you know, in theory, a goalkeeper is one out of 11 players, obviously other players in the squad, etc. So you'd ordinarily win it, let's say, give or take 10% of the time. But it is always higher than that, which is nice, because I think as much as we'll talk on here about maybe where goalkeeping isn't regarded in the way that we would like it to be, of course, and we talk a lot about the commentators and certain comments, lack of education when it comes to the goalkeeping position. That being said, I think it's always nice to see this, that fans still do appreciate the work that a goalkeeper does, and other players within the team appreciate the work that a goalkeeper does. So for that many awards, that's well over 10%, is a really good sign.
It is a really good sign. Right, before we move on, Richard, to the actual show, just a spot of correspondence. We had a tweet in last week, so I'm going to read it out. It is from a gentleman named Divesh Nair, who says, "What are De Gea's prospects? Have you guys heard anything around him? He seems to have been completely forgotten about. Saw he posted a clip of him training alone, which just made me sad." And this perhaps is a little more apt, considering the mauling dished out upon Manchester United last night by Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's such a strange situation. He's effectively taken a year out. It's like finished university, wants to travel the world, you know, get to know himself. Just really odd, you know, because he will no doubt have had loads and loads of inquiries over that time. You know, from what we understand, what you read, you know, he wants it to be an elite club and he's waiting for that. The problem is, of course, the longer you go without playing, the harder it is to get that. Your stock naturally will drop. Over this last year, his stock will have dropped a bit. So I'm fascinated to see what happens this summer. That being said, he's got such a big profile and big name that there will still be Premier League clubs, I'm sure, that if they are in need of a goalkeeper this summer, that will be inquiring as to whether it's a possibility. I guess it then comes back to what he wants to do. The fact that he's still keeping himself fit, and I've seen some of the training videos online, he's still in good shape. He's still working hard, obviously. So you do get the impression that he is keen to crack on again this summer. But yeah, the fact it's been a year, I'm just really curious as to what level he ends up. Or maybe he does go to one of the bigger clubs, but maybe not as the one, and we'll wait for that opportunity again. I'm not sure, but just a really, really bizarre situation.
What did you make of that video? Because I kind of saw it in two ways. One, I think he was at Altrincham, wasn't he? Now, with all due respect to Altrincham, it made that video a bit more spit and sawdust, didn't it? I think of the video that Loris Karius put out a few years ago. Do you remember after the Champions League final, I think it was, of him in sun-drenched LA, running hands through his hair, like doing sprints in Beverly Hills, all that sort of stuff. And this is completely different.
Yeah, and I remember at the time, Karius got a lot of stick for that, if I remember rightly, because it was, like you say, soon after the Champions League final. And I think a lot of it is, and whether there's been this much thought that goes into it, a lot of it is you're trying to put something out, you're trying to market yourself to an extent. And I guess the thinking around this is that he is putting the work in. It's not a, you know, particularly well edited video, let's say. It's not one that he's got a camera crew there recording it and publishing it and doing whatever. It is just almost someone's got their iPhone out and they're doing a bit of recording of him while he's doing some work. And look, whether you're doing the work at Altrincham or, you know, in LA, you're still doing the work. So I'm guessing there would have been a bit of thought to this, that he just wants to give off the impression that he is working hard, you know, and he's putting in the hours ready for pre-season. But again, I come back to my point. I'm fascinated and I wish I could give some insight here, but I am fascinated to see where he ends up. And I do hope it's in England.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, starting in the Premier League at the Emirates, Arsenal 3, Bournemouth 0. And it looked like it was going to be one of those days for Mark Travers. He wasn't having to make outstanding saves in the game, but he was very much keeping Arsenal at bay with a series of saves. A really good performance from him. He's been very good since he stepped in for Neto for these final few games of the season, until a penalty was awarded due to a foul on Kai Havertz. But was it a foul and was it a penalty?
Yeah, do you know what? So I've looked at this several times and I think look, firstly, in terms of whether it's a foul or not, Kai Havertz knows what he's doing. Of course he does. You watch it again, he's dragged the foot. It's a bit of a technique that strikers use. I suppose I'd focus more on a goalkeeper in that situation. And as you say, look, firstly, want to say very, very good game. And again, since he stepped in, very good. I think with this situation, there was a really good example. I think it was Olsen that we're going to talk about shortly, where a similar situation where the striker's effectively trying to go round you and you have that decision when you get to a point, if you know you're not going to get there, and it's not an easy decision, but at which point do you hold? You know, do you hold and then allow either allow the player to go round you, but know that you've done enough to put them wide to make it a difficult finish thereafter? A lot of the time they'll put it out for a goal kick. And I just think maybe at that point, there is a point you think, oh, can you just hold now? And then it wouldn't give the referee that decision to make. That being said, I do feel for him because I've had that done to me where you go down, you still feel like you're far enough away from them. And the next thing you know, a random rogue foot hits you from nowhere. And you kind of feel like, well, that wasn't a natural action for you to do that. But you've somehow forced the contact and therefore you've bought the penalty. That's the expression I would use. But at the same time, I think Trav's looking at it, loads and loads of good stuff in the game. I think for this in particular, you might just look at it and think, could I have just held in that moment?
Well, interestingly, I'll just read out his comments after the game. He did say, from a goalkeeper's perspective, I was just trying to come out and make a save. I wasn't thinking about Havertz dangling out a leg. I was just trying to make myself big. I don't know what else I'm supposed to do. Just stand there so he can hit it first time so it goes in.
Yeah, and look, and I don't disagree with those comments because he has come out and he's, even that, it's not like he's gone, yeah, it would have been, I suppose, had he had dived out and gone at feet, dived with his hands, Havertz gets there first and he hits his hands, then you know, gets a more obvious penalty. I think this is one of those grey areas where, and we see this how many times a season, so many times a season, where, because the other bit is, I do understand as well, is when you've got momentum, you can't just stop in your tracks and let them go around you. So there is that little bit of momentum, but at the same time, he's not looking to trip up Kai Havertz. He is performing a spread. I go back to my point whether he could have done that half a yard before and maybe just allowed Havertz to go round him or just created that little bit more space. But it's such a fine line because you want to get close enough so that you can create a long barrier and look to make the save. And naturally, by getting that close, sometimes you're going to be too close. And the strikers are clever. You know, they know how to buy these penalties. And certainly with VAR being what it is now, you know, I'm sure there's more penalties than ever this year. I'd love to see the stats at the end of the season. I reckon we probably had double the number of penalties this season than we've ever had before. And a lot of that is because, yeah, look, you get a penalty, you're going to score 90% of the time. You know, such high reward for a foul in the box. So if you can buy it, which a lot of them do, then they're going to look to do that.
In defence of the attacker as well, in these scenarios, I do think it's very difficult to try and hurdle a challenge like that. When a goalkeeper's coming out and spreading himself, to then try and hurdle it, I think is quite difficult. There was, weirdly, there was a similar situation in the National League North playoff final between Boston and Brackley, where an attacker has ridden the challenge of two defenders who have come in and basically both challenged them. He's jumped through the middle of them. Now, technically, they didn't make any contact with him, but because of the nature of the challenge, he then went over and a penalty was awarded and no one said anything because it was a penalty, because I think it would have been difficult for him to have hurdled that challenge, because you could potentially also maybe sustain an injury in trying to hurdle it and then not falling properly.
Yeah, I agree. And this is where I go back to, it's a grey area, because I'd prefer it if they do hurdle it, but it is a blatant foul and they get the penalty, because at least they've like made an effort to do that. I just think, but then there's also the other side of it, which is like, was that a natural action for Havertz to kind of drag his foot in the way that he did? I don't think that was a natural action. I think if he does his natural action, he doesn't hit Travers and he just goes past him. So I think there is that. And I'm going to call out an ex-teammate of mine, because I thought, I'm going to say this as a compliment to him, because he was brilliant at it, was Ashley Young. You know, I remember when I was with him at Watford and he did it quite a lot thereafter, where it is that kind of dragging of the leg. You get the contact. The moment you do the spin, fall over. And of course, it looks like a blatant foul. But that dragging of the foot, that's the bit for me. And look, that's where it's a grey area, because I think that it's going to take someone incredibly skilled and knowledgeable to look at that VAR and be like, he's dragged his foot there. That's not natural, you know. And naturally, I think most will look at it, see the contact and put two and two together and come up with a foul.
Penalty take timer. Do you want to hear the latest as a result of that foul? The penalty was taken by Bukayo Saka. How long do you think this time?
Go on.
Got a new record, 16.37 seconds.
There you go. Just building the suspense. But it's, again, it's another part. I know we'll talk about this probably way too much in that. Go back to my point there. It's far too easy now to get a penalty and it's far too easy to score a penalty. It's as simple as that. They've massively put the odds in the favour of the attacker. Goalkeeper's very much not thought of in these situations. At some point, that whole thing needs to change. Either the penalty, it needs to be evened up a bit where the goalkeeper's got more of a chance. And I've got my ideas on that, as you well know. Because the problem you'll have is that the clubs that are intelligent about it, and again, we should do that. Maybe you get a chance next week. I'll give you a little bit of work to do here. But work out the number of penalties that have been taken in total this season and who's had the most. I've got no doubt that, like, I don't know how many Haaland's got on his own, for instance. But because the reward is so high, naturally teams, this is a conversation in dressing rooms. I know it is, in terms of how best to win a penalty. Of course, if you're in the box and you can find a way to draw the foul, then, yeah, near enough, most of the time, you're going to be getting a goal out of it.
Bournemouth were not awarded a goal in this game, nor a possible pen due to a foul from Dominic Solanke on David Raya. So I ask you, Richard, pen or no pen, goal or no goal, foul or no foul?
Well, Matthew, you've given me a lot of options there. And I'll be honest, I've had a busy weekend. Obviously, I was watching all the championship games. You've obviously sent me this footage. All I've been focusing on is the foul on Raya. So go on. Give me your thoughts.
Typical. Absolutely typical. So you didn't see the quite blatant tug from William Saliba on Philip Billing. Now, if we're talking about grey areas, this is a massive grey area because that tug, and I could have missed something here, I don't know, that tug on Billing occurred before the possible foul from Dominic Solanke on David Raya. So where do we go with this one? I wouldn't love to hear it because it's complete nonsense, but the audio from that VAR would be, yes, quite eye-opening, I think.
Yeah, well, this is probably sums up where I'm at in terms of I watch footage, I watch goalkeepers. If there's even a conversation about whether Raya was fouled, I'll be shocked about that because that was blatant. That is a foul. Or has there been a conversation about that? Surely not.
Well, no, there was a bit of conjecture, wasn't there, that it wasn't enough of a shove or enough of a shoulder on him for it to be awarded a foul.
Mental. Foul. Like, so I've watched that once and I'm like, of course it's a foul. For so many reasons. It's kind of similar to the Trafford-Luton one earlier in the season, which was just crazy that was given. But this where the player, Solanke's looking at it, like, you know, it's so obvious what he's doing as well. And yeah, he's just gone into him. He's not even looking at the ball at all. He's looking at Raya. He's gone and nudged him, which has meant that Raya hasn't been able to hold it or punch it correctly. It is a blatant foul. Now, like you say, if there was a foul that happened before it, which obviously it sounds like there was, then probably should have been a penalty. But in terms of the foul on Raya, yes, absolutely correct. That was as blatant as it comes.
We also saw a number of goalkeeping collisions / short back passes at the weekend. And the reason I bring it up now is because there was one from Declan Rice on Mark Travers. There was another from Simon Adingra and Robin Olsen in the win for Brighton over Aston Villa. We saw a poor back pass for Bolton to go 2-0 up at Barnsley. A penalty was awarded on that one after Liam Roberts brought down Josh Sheehan. There was a big one in the National League player final between Bromley and Solihull. That was for a penalty that was then awarded to Bromley. Michael Cheek scoring after Nick Hayes had felled him. And there was one in the game as well between Rotherham and Cardiff, which resulted in a goal for Jordan Hughill.
Yeah, it's always difficult, I think, and I've made this point recently on the podcast, when someone plays the ball back to you, because your initial thought is it will reach you, you naturally commit. And I think it's so difficult when someone's passing the ball back. I spoke earlier about, you know, whether in Travers in that moment, whether, you know, whether or not there was a possibility they could have held a split second earlier. I think it's even more difficult on a pass back because naturally you're coming out to clear the ball or you're coming out to pass it out to one of your players. And because your mindset straight away is, I will get there, you often find that when it is those 50-50s, you end up losing them. And of course, if you're swinging to clear a ball, it's going to end up in a foul. You know, I really felt for Nick Hayes in particular in the final, in that I don't know what else you really do there. You know, I can go back and give the same advice that I mentioned in regards to Travers. Maybe could he have helped? Yeah, in hindsight, you look at it, the guy got there first. Maybe he holds at that point. But it's so difficult, I think, on a pass back where you just assume that you're going to get there first and clear it. And you don't always see the guy in your peripheral vision that comes in and just nicks a toe on it.
The one with Travers, to be fair, wasn't a pass back. I was actually referring to the bravery he showed and the challenge with Declan Rice when the cross came in and he was then collided into.
He was. Now, I thought this was brilliant. I thought for, you know, and I've got no issue with the attacker here. I do want to talk about the Olsen one briefly because I do have a bit of an issue with the attacker on that one. But I think with this one in particular for Travers, I thought the, for a start, coming out like that head first, you don't see many goalkeepers do that. And I wish you saw more to an extent. But of course, there is such high risk of injury. But it's a great ball in. He's realised he can get it first. And the only way he can really get there is effectively a Superman dive forward. It's actually a brilliant punch as well. And of course, then gets clattered thereafter. But no, this for me is top, top goalkeeping. Really, really brave. The Olsen one for me was a little bit different in that it is a through ball that he's come and smothered. And I still wonder, like, and part of this comes from personal experience where I've had it a few times myself, where a ball's there, you slide out, you get it, and you also get a player slide in at the same time. And I do think it's a slightly different situation. When you're sliding out to smother the ball, and then someone's effectively sliding in, you know, 1 foot, 2 feet, and they'll always catch you in the face, catch you in the chest, the stomach. And it's a bit like, what are you trying to get from that situation? Like, you're trying to get the ball to pop out? I mean, if so, it's going to be a foul anyway. I don't like these situations because I think the goalkeeper has to be brave there. And it's not particularly brave from an attacker to come and slide in with their feet. The risk of injury is high, and I don't really see the point of doing it.
Okay, moving on to the Etihad. Man City 5, Wolves 1. Edison perhaps at fault for the Wolves' goal scored by Hwang Hee-chan, responding, however, in the only way Edison knows how, by then kick-starting the move for Erling Haaland to restore the deficit. Lovely pass out from the back.
Yeah, brilliant ball. Brilliant ball, and it was really not an easy one. It looks fine on camera. You know, you get the perspective we get, and he's just played it into the midfielder who's turned, put Haaland in. But I can assure you, and goalkeepers will appreciate this, from a goalkeeper's perspective, when you're looking to play that ball and you've effectively got to thread it through two players, he's even done it slightly with the inside of the foot just to get a bit of curl on it to get it to his man. And the speed at which he got it there, fantastic ball. And I didn't actually think there was a great deal more he could do with a goal, to be honest. Like, again, you only look at the goalkeeper's part of this, where the ball's crossed in, he realises he can't catch it, so what do? You leave it, or do you then look to tip it away? Well, you look to tip it away, you tip it to where you think would be a safe area, which is exactly what he's done, and it's just bad luck that someone's there and puts it in. But naturally, questions will be asked, because it was his touch that's then gone to the attacking player who scored. But I go back to that. I don't know what you do as a goalkeeper. If you know you can't catch it, you're backpedaling, and you know you can get a tip on it, do you choose to tip it away or do you choose to leave it? I think you'll always tip it away, and I just think he's unfortunate here that the tip goes to an opposing player.
Can I offer a controversial opinion, Richard?
Go on.
I'll ask the question. Is Edison looking less infallible by the game this season?
I had a feeling you might ask something like that, and I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, look, again, we spoke a lot about goalkeepers and their roles within certain teams and how it is very, very different. You know, Thomas Kaminski this season has been fantastic in a team where he's been absolutely peppered, and he's shown just what a fantastic shot stopper he is, and he has been the perfect fit for Luton to give them a chance this season. Edison is very much that for Man City. I still don't think there's anybody in the world that is better than that. There have been one or two moments lately, and I don't know. I go back to the fact that I think in a season, you're going to have a number of moments. I call them moments. I won't call them other names, errors, or whatever you want to call them. But you'll have a number of moments throughout the season. It's always great when you find those moments are sort of spread apart, because then they're not really noticed. It's just when you have like a little glut. And I just feel like it can happen at any time. And sometimes you get unlucky and you might have a few within a period of weeks, and then people do ask questions. If those same moments happened every 7-8 weeks apart, we don't notice it. So no, I don't think he is. I think he's still in a good place. Everything I've seen of him recently, again, the fact that he bounces back so quickly, you just mentioned the pass he made there, it doesn't seem to affect him. City are in a strong place, and yeah, no, I think he's very much everything he has been and will continue to be.
Okay, just a few more good saves we'll highlight to finish up the Premier League action. So Matt Sells from Gustavo Hamer in a victory for Nottingham Forest at Sheffield United. That was one apiece at the time, so a really good save from him. Robin Olsen, we've spoken about already, from Pascal Gross and Joao Pedro in a defeat for Aston Villa at Brighton. Thomas Kaminski from Dominic Calvert-Lewin in a draw for Luton at home to Everton. Worth highlighting, not just for the save, but for the almost complete lack of acknowledgement or commentary with that one. And Dean Henderson and Rasmus Højlund in that aforementioned win for Crystal Palace against Manchester United. Foul or no foul?
Again, foul. I mean, you know I'm going to say foul. You know I am.
No, like, I agree. Of course, that one was blatant.
I just think it's that, like, the moment you've left the ground and you get nudged. Like, I did hear, I think it was Alan Smith when it makes the point, oh, if that was two outfield players, you get away with it. Of course you do, Alan, because you're doing two completely different techniques. Like, it just annoys me. It's like, why even say that? It's just a ridiculous point talking about a completely different situation. A goalkeeper's jumping, trying to catch the ball, and the guy nudges him out of the way. You can't catch the ball. Fine, if two of you are going for a header, you're both performing the same technique, it's a duel, I get it. You're performing two completely different techniques. It's a foul. You've tried to stop the goalie catching the ball. So that annoyed me. Do you know, I feel a bit angered today. You can probably sense it. I'm a little bit, I don't know why. I felt really good before this, but just looking at a few of these goalkeeping situations, this is what it does. Starts me in about, I mean, this can't be good moving forward. I like it when it's a real positive chat. We're talking about great saves. Let me move on to the great saves, because there are a few that you've mentioned there. So Thomas Kaminski, yeah, again, not noticed or mentioned. It's going to get me angry again, but no, brilliant save. The way in which it's actually what he does beforehand, the speed of feet across to his near post, the speed of feet back to the middle of the goal, sets in a very good position, sets a bit higher than you would because it's 5-6 yards out as a header, recognises the situation, speed to get his hand up, so athletic. Brilliant, brilliant save. I thought Matt Sell's save as well was top. Given the magnitude of this game, I watched this game and I was really impressed with him actually. But I think this, from distance, moving everywhere, dipping under the crossbar, really powerful up to his right to get fingertips to this. And I know we spoke about Olsen, but he did. He made some big, big saves in this game. Lovely spread in particular came out. He's such a big man anyway, but it was actually his trailing arm that made the save in this one. We spoke about the bravery when he slid out, and I know I touched on it earlier, but I love how he read the situation of the through ball with the guy going round him, held his position. The moment he takes a touch, he goes with him, then creates the block. Just really intelligent goalkeeping. So loads and loads of good goalkeeping this weekend.
It is the EFL overview, the final EFL overview of the campaign. Monumental clean sheets for Mike Cooper, James Beadle and Ainsley Pears as Plymouth, Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn all avoided the drop on the final day. Pears in particular finishing what has been a rather turbulent campaign, I guess you could say, both for him and Leo Volstead, to be fair, with a big double save as Rovers were 1-0 up at Leicester, first denying Harry Winks and then reacting to help Kelechi Iheanacho's rebound header onto the bar. Joe Walsh with his good a first league start as one might wish for. So he's appeared in cups and off the bench for Gillingham and QPR, but handed the gloves from the get-go as Rangers won away at Coventry. Five saves in total, two top stops from Ellis Sims and Callum O'Hare in the second half. Vaslav Platke receiving a warm ovation from Ipswich fans as he was replaced in the final few minutes of their promotion clinching win over Huddersfield. Possibly his last game for the Tractor Boys. We shall wait and see what happens with that one. But certainly playing his last game for Millwall is Bart Bielkowski. So he didn't play in the win at Swansea, but that is now the poll seeking past his new 169 consecutive appearances, two Player of the Season awards, a Golden Glove, and plenty of memories to boot.
Oh, lots to talk about there. I mean, it was a fantastic day, by the way. I think I made it known. I've got my setup in my office, which I'm currently in, where I can have up to 12 games on at any time. And I did have about six on at this particular time. So I did watch Joe Walsh, thought he was fantastic. You know, first game debut, as you say, it couldn't have gone any better, really. Three or four top saves, a save down low to his left in particular, tipping around the post, superb. The one high up to his right as well, very, very good. Just looked really composed throughout, so a massive well done to him. Ainsley Pears, as you mentioned, there's been a bit up and down, I think it's fair to say, and obviously it's been a bit back and forth between him and Walstead, but what a time to put in a performance like this. I saw a lot of the ratings in the paper the next day, the local paper, all giving him 10s, which again, you know, it was crazy, the fact that all the teams down there, four teams that were involved in the relegation scrap on the final day, all of them getting victories, you know, to put in those types of performances when you need it most, shows great mentality as well. So big well done to him too. And then just to touch upon some of the other guys that you mentioned there, James Beadle obviously stepping in for Sheffield Wednesday. They weren't in a particularly good position when he stepped in January to escape relegation. Being on the run they have, I think they're top five or six for form since January. Really excited to see what they do next season. And Michael Cooper too, you know, Plymouth, it looked like, and I was concerned for them because they've not been anywhere near the relegation zone all season. I thought, is it going to be one of them where they go into it on the final day? How cruel that could be. But again, to produce the victory they did, the clean sheet they did, and for Michael Cooper to do that, where it's been a tough few weeks for the team, not really picking up many results, but to get a result like that on the final day, just a brilliant feeling. The moment that final whistle goes and you know you've got the job done, pitch invasions and everything else. Yeah, fantastic day. And a big well done to Hladky as well. You know, it's a crazy story, really. The fact that Christian Walton played the whole of the League One season. Hladky, there was questions this time last year whether he might move on because he was obviously wanting to play. But it just shows you how quickly a goalkeeper's life can change. You know, 1 year later and you've played all 46 games in a promotion season into the Premier League. You know, the options this summer, this time last summer would have been very, very different to what they are now. And as you say, it'll be seen soon as to whether he will stay there or move on.
We'll just quickly touch on the EFL playoffs, Richard. So Bolton and Barnsley play the second leg of their playoff semi-final tie in League One this evening. We'll just quickly mention the last game, the first leg. So Bolton 3-1 up as it stands. Nathan Baxter, really good save from Adam Phillips at 2-1. Randall Williams then scoring straight from a corner right at the death, which could be the clincher, but foul or no foul on Liam Roberts from Cameron Jerome.
Right, so this is an interesting one because, and again, goalkeepers looking at this, I don't know what more Liam Roberts can do. He's got someone blocking him completely, that, you know, no other job than to impede him. So surely it has to be a foul. Like, Liam Roberts, if he's not there, Liam Roberts collects this ball very comfortably. But the fact that he's there and he is just blocking him, backing into him, and allows the ball then to pass and go into the corner, surely it has to be a foul. And I don't know if this one falls more in the middle a little bit in that he has just sort of held his ground. But he's done it very obviously again to block Liam Roberts. So I feel for Roberts here in that I don't know what else he can do. I suppose that's it. I do question how it hasn't been cleared at the near post. I mean, that to me, it wasn't like the ball came in any significant height. It's come in very low and gone right into the far corner. So I feel it has to be cleared by a defender at the near post. But then I just don't know what more a goalkeeper can do.
And Doncaster are ahead in their playoff semi-final with Crewe. They won 2-0 last night. The bigger talking point here is that Timothée Lotu-Tala, on loan from Hull, was in the starting lineup.
Yeah, the red card was overturned. I didn't actually see the ruling on why. I mean, at the time, I wasn't sure whether it would be. The fact that it was, you know, and he pretty much walked off straight away. He knew that it was going to be a red card. So yeah, I haven't seen what the ruling was and why it was overturned. But yeah, look, for him, I'm pleased it was. You know, we spoke a lot about his personal time at Doncaster and just how successful it's been and how successful it's been for him, you know, individually and for the team. Just an unbelievable story. Who would have said when he went there on loan, when they were more thinking about getting out of the relegation scrap, that now they're a step away from Wembley? It's an unbelievable story. So I'm glad that it was overturned, but yeah, I'm still unsure as to what the ruling was or why it was overturned.
Yeah, that's either the club secretary at Doncaster throwing in an audacious attempt to get it overturned or being very well informed about the rules when it comes to red cards and goalkeepers. So I guess this falls somewhere in the whole double jeopardy ruling, right? Whereby if you're a defender and you legitimately go to challenge a striker, don't get the ball and a penalty is awarded or you're the last man, you're not red carded because the double jeopardy. In this instance, the only reasoning that I can think is that the header that's headed back to him from his own defender isn't going in the goal. And the fact that there were, I think, two or three covering defenders at the time who would have run back with the striker whose trajectory of running at the time wasn't towards the ball just meant that it wouldn't have been a certain goal for the attacker. So if anything, this is a good thing for goalkeepers, but it's not what we're used to.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's exactly that. I think when you look at the footage again, was the striker definitely going to get to the ball and put it into an empty net? No. Was the ball actually going to go in? Again, it's hard to tell from the camera angle, but it was unlikely that it would go in from that particular header. So yeah, I guess when you look at it from that angle, the fact that it's not stopping a goal scoring opportunity, yeah, I understand why it'll be reduced to a yellow. But it was just interesting at the time in that when it happened, you know, there wasn't much debate. It was one where the red cards came straight out and he walked straight off. You know, sometimes you will have those moments where a player feels a bit hard done by. He you know, I think credit to him, he accepted it, he walked off. But yeah, really pleased for him that it was overturned.
And into non-league, Richard, Bromley up in the National League player final. We've spoken about Nick Hayes already. What a game this was, by the way. Really, really entertaining game to watch. It did go to a shootout. Grant Smith, the hero for Bromley, saving the first two penalties. Nick Hayes did save the second Bromley penalty. Very, very nearly saved the first.
Yeah, it was a tough one, the first, because he's read it perfectly, decided to stay still. But it just shows you, even if you stay still, if someone absolutely hammers it down the middle, and I know we used to speak about Troy Deeney's technique when it came to penalties, it's kind of this, it's still so hard to react. You know, someone firing at 70 miles an hour straight at you, the speed at which you've got to move your hands, and he was so unlucky that he couldn't quite get a hand to it. Did make a very good save in the shootout, as you mentioned, but a massive well done to Grant Smith. You know, I know he's certainly done it the hard way. He's kind of been here and there and always performed at such a high level. Hears such positive things about him in the National League in particular. So for him now to step into League Two and have that chance to be a, you know, number one again at League Two level, really pleased for him.
Changed your tune a bit there, haven't you, on the Troy Deeney penalty? Because I'm sure for a long, long time you said at some point someone's going to save a Troy Deeney penalty. They're going to figure it out. They'll stay in the middle of their goal and they'll save it. But now you're saying it's really hard to save it. So, well, you're backtracking.
Matt, being a bit pedantic, aren't we, here? Because, yeah, look, is that right? There's the question. Was that a savable penalty at the weekend? I think when Nick's been a bit unlucky, if it hits him, it hits him and he saves it. It's the fact that it's, what, half a yard to the side of him. He just couldn't quite get his hand to it. But I think that, obviously, it's a good example. Nick Hayes knew what he was going to do, so stayed still and gave himself a really good chance at saving the penalty. You know, if that penalty's taken 100 times and a goalkeeper stays still 100 times, it's going to be difficult to save given the power. But I still think, and we saw some really good penalties in this, I still think there are better techniques when it comes to a penalty than smashing it down the middle if you're known for smashing it down the middle.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to call you out for the backtrack. That's all, Richard. On to the National League South playoff final. Watched this yesterday between Braintree and Worthing and just wanted to highlight Jack Sims, who made a couple of huge saves for Braintree Town. They go into the National League with victory.
Yeah, a couple of excellent saves. A double save in particular to his left. Got up really quickly, then made the spread save. It's near post. And the tip wide as well, because it's one of them where he's tempted towards the ball. He then finds himself in an unfamiliar position, but the speed at which he was able to get back, and he wasn't going to be able to tip this over the bar, given he was still a good 6-7 yards out. So to have the intelligence, the speed of thought, to be able to get the tip wide of the post, top save.
Yeah, top save. And if we're going to mention Jack Sims, then we should mention Cameron Gregory into the National League with Boston, so well done to him. Jaz Singh up into the National League with Tamworth. 29 goals conceded in 46 games for Jaz Singh, so that is very impressive. Although I think it was 45, he missed one game. But as a whole, a collective, 29 goals in 46 games for Tamworth. That is some defensive record. Joe Day, we'll mention, up with Yeovil into the National League, although, of course, his future will depend on what happens in the summer. And Harry Tyrer, we should mention him too, excellent at Chesterfield this season on loan from Everton. So nice, Richard, to just mention a few names that don't always get a mention or don't often get a mention on the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Yeah, it certainly is. The defensive record for Tamworth is very, very impressive. Do you know what? I do love this time of the season for the fact that so many of these games are televised. And as you say, you know, I remember even playing at the level that I did, when the games are televised, knowing that you've got those extra eyes on you, it really is an opportunity for so many of these lads to be seen, you know, and to be mentioned on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, which is, I'm sure, what they really want.
Absolutely. And just to finish, Richard, because I believe your dad has arrived.
He has. He is visiting Dubai for a couple of days. So he has literally just arrived. So I am going to take him for lunch, show him the sights of Dubai over the next day or two. So I will have to go. Sorry, listeners.
Okay, lovely stuff. Well, Bayer Leverkusen's Lukas Hradecky, he has now set a record for a foreign goalkeeper in the Bundesliga. He made his 292nd appearance in a 5-0 win over Eintracht Frankfurt. Can you name the goalkeeper that he surpassed? Foreign goalkeepers making record appearances in the Bundesliga.
Tough question. Go on. Who?
Jan Sommer. Richard, Jan Sommer. You should have got that one.
I should have. I'm distracted, obviously.
Okay, and finally, Tim Howard, inducted into the US National Soccer Hall of Fame. A lovely accolade for him.
And much deserved. No, delighted to hear that. I mean, look, we spoke about Tim Howard a lot previously. Phenomenal career, so a big well done to him.
And I tell you what we will do is we'll actually finish on the speech that Tim Howard gave at that particular event. So, Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.
When I think about my earliest soccer memories, I think about our apartment in North Brunswick, New Jersey. It,
backed up to a brick wall. And I was this rambunctious little kid, and I had a piece of chalk, and I drew a goal on the brick wall. And I said, Mom, come outside, play soccer with me. And God bless you, you don't have an athletic bone in your body, but you got yourself out there. And for those of you in the room who remember soccer balls way back when, they had glued on patches, and the patches would come off, you'd hold it, and that's how you'd roll it. And put my baseball batting gloves on, and God bless you, you ran and you towed that ball, and I dove around, and that was one of my earliest soccer memories of being a goalkeeper. The second one is in that great Belgium game. Second overtime, we change over, and saw you, I found you. I didn't know where your seats were. I was so locked into the game and focused, but I saw you and I made eye contact, and I gave you a fist pump just to let you know nothing, there was nothing at all to worry about, and that we got this. We most certainly didn't have it, and there was a lot to worry about, as we found out. But it was my way of trying to repay you. But I mentioned, it's easy at the top. But you sat with me at rock bottom, you held my hand, you walked alongside me, you carried me at times. The greatest thing you've ever done for me is let me know the world's not gonna feel sorry for you, so get up and move on. And every now and again, with a loving kiss on the cheek, and a swift kick up the backside, you got me back out in the world, and I am so incredibly appreciative and forever grateful, and will never be able to repay what you've given to me. So thank you. In closing, I often think about what it is I most want people to know about me. I hear people talk about me all the time, and they say, God-given ability. I don't know what that is. That's ambiguous, it's vague, and it's subjective. What's not ambiguous and vague and subjective was my desire to be the greatest goalkeeper this country has ever seen. The truth is, any great athlete will tell you, when you stand in that tunnel shoulder to shoulder with your brothers, look your opponent in the eye, you're scared to death. You want the ground to swallow you whole. You're afraid of failure. You're vulnerable. And self-doubt consumes you. So here's what I want you to know about me. The bell rang 121 times for me. And 121 times, I answered the bell for the greatest country in the world. And for that, I'm most grateful. Thank you.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.